Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
It's Thursday. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Joining me are from Southern California, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, how you doing?
Good, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right. And then from McAllen, Texas, Tim Lynch. Timmy, how's it going?
Just fine, Mac. How about yourself?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Let's talk about Vietnam. What's the guy? Who's the guy who Jeff liked then hated? What's that guy?
Musgrave.
Musgrave. I have a different opinion about Musgrave now. I need to get him on the show though. But when I finished watching the series, as Timmy did after the last time we spoke, right? Timmy, I think, finished over the weekend, and so did I. They didn't go there to throw their medals, right? They went there, and what they were going to do was they were going to give their speeches and put their medals in a body bag, right? And they were going to put the body bag on the steps of the Capitol. And Musgrave tells the story that the day before, they erected a fence to keep them away from the Capitol. And he said, and that just fucking pissed us off. Now, when he said that, right, and we talked about last week respect and things like that. I mean, I put myself in his position. And I put myself there with you, Jeff, and Timmy, and some other of our friends. And if we went through what they went through, could I picture some of us doing that? And my answer is yes. That we would all not react in the same balanced way to what we perceive to be our government shitting on us. Now, I would want to get him on an interview him and said, hey, you said Kerry in his initial statement spoke for you. Would you care? Do you have any thoughts on the additional things he said? And I would hope he would say, yeah, I thought his additional stuff was bullshit, right? But after watching the end of it, my thoughts on that event changed because listening to them and what their plan was and then what happened. And so anyway, I'll throw that out. Timmy, you finished watching it. Any final thoughts from the Vietnam series? You have to unmute yourself, bro.
I cannot believe I do that consistently.
Why don't you put like a sticky on your computer that says unmute, and when you mute, put the sticky up. When you unmute, take it down.
Yeah, I think I might have to be doing something that basic. Jeez, you'd think the blinking light would be a cue.
No, it's a trend, okay? So we only counsel in case of trends. You just consider.
I know it is. I'm starting to be alarmed. No, I agree with your assessment on the metal throwing thing. I had for some reason remembered Kerry throwing those over the fence of the White House in a single act of protest. I had not remembered that incident correctly. And I went and saw it again. And yeah, you're right. I don't know what Musgrave was saying when he said John Kerry spoke for him, because that's the part that drives me apoplectic with rage, some of the stories he had, but I'll let that lie. What was interesting to me, was fascinating, was the phone call they taped between LBJ and Nixon after Nixon had sabotaged the peace talks in order to guarantee his election to help him out.
Allegedly.
Yeah, Jeff says that didn't happen. But you hear that conversation, you're like, wait a minute, what is Kenny next, a Holocaust denier? What's going on here?
No, he was lying through his teeth. You know that LBJ knows he's lying through his teeth, and what a fascinating dance to listen to those two guys, because I think they both knew what they were doing. It was it's that kind of kabuki theater that irritates the hell out of me, but it was fascinating.
Kenny? I mean, Richard Nixon? Go ahead, take the floor.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that revelation supposedly came out in like 2006. But that's like somebody heard that Nixon and Kissinger did that. There's no documentation. These guys treat that as they do the claim that more black people proportionally got killed in Vietnam than other, you know, ethnic groups, as if it's gospel. And they usually do it in the context of seven or eight other very good observations and very true things, and they'll stick that in there. And they kept pushing that about that Nixon thing. It's never been proven, because if it was, it would have been trumpeted. It would have been trumpeted. That's the first you guys and me ever heard of that shit, is on that documentary. And if it came out in 2007, right before the election that was in 2008, you know that would have got in there somewhere. And then what I want to say about the – I still don't agree with anything that they did regarding their medals.
Right.
And I got good company there. The guys who were there did more stuff than those guys, even though those guys, like Musgrave – and it was only Musgrave of the three Marines that did that. I mean, you didn't see Harris doing it, and I don't think that other guy, the guy who was in the First Marines, did it either. Of, you know, the three Marines they showcased. But you got to notice something about that. That was a masterfully done documentary, masterfully. And it's really compelling in a lot of parts. But the basic premise is, why don't you guys just admit the whole thing was wrong? So they put these, like, attractive characters on there, but all of them come out with the same, it was wrong. But if you talk to guys like General Zinni, or you talk to guys like General Smith, they'll say, yeah, we fucked up a lot during that thing, but the idea wasn't wrong. It's not wrong to stop the march of a totalitarian government that's trying to swallow up another one, no matter how corrupt and screwed up the one they're trying to swallow up is. They just, what they'll say is, we fucked it up. And that's what I say. And when you do that stuff,
That's what Wolfowitz says, and you blast Wolfowitz for saying that.
Wait, whoa, 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 whoa. No, Wolfowitz says that about Iraq.
Right.
Okay. And he says that it was an ill executed plan, but their original plan was good. Their tactics were stupid. They didn't have enough mass. They didn't have enough mass. And that's what he says. I'll never agree with that. And that's not the same thing that I'm saying. It was stupid to try and fucking pacify Iraq with 120,000 people, particularly in the way we fight now, where at least a quarter of those people are sitting around looking at computer screens and fobs, not actually out doing a job. And so that's what I will never agree with. And that's the type of shit that Wolfowitz is saying. He didn't know what he's talking about. And neither did Cambone. And for that matter, neither did Rumsfeld. And going back, neither did McNamara. They try and soften McNamara and Johnson, even though those two guys are the biggest criminal, criminal leaders of the Vietnam War. Nixon got handed this shit show worse than what Trump got handed in regards to Iraq and Afghanistan. And he was trying to make it, good. And you know what? He almost did.
And
they cannot stand to have that type of opinion. You got to say, yes, this was an unwinnable war. Yes, we were immoral for being there. Even though we had good guys who did nice things, you know, it still was bad. Well, fuck you. You're wrong. I disagree with that. You know, that's what I'm saying. And there's a lot of people like Mike Etor, for one. Yesterday, we talked about that at length. And not only him, Ray Smith, Ronnie Lee Stepp, my NCIC in Iran, and my company Gunny in 3-5, and a shitload of other guys who actually fought that thing and managed to somehow didn't find themselves in D.C. throwing their fucking Purple Hearts, you know, on a shit pile.
No, look, I'm just saying, if there's a group of our friends and that went and that happened, I could see some of us doing it.
And you can say
that, oh no, none of our friends would do it. I would disagree with you. Here's what, and this is another broader take on the whole.
I don't know anybody who would do that.
Here's my friend. Right. Okay. Here's a broader take on the series. I think after watching it a second time, that what Burns is trying to show with all the different characters, to include that Zimmerman dude. Right, the guy who's the anti-war, the protester guy, because in the end he says we fucked it up. Right, the things we did were wrong, and what we morphed into. And so, what I believe that Burns is trying to show with the characters that the people that he brings in and into it is that every one of them morphs throughout. Every one of them changes, And I think what he tries to show through the way the characters change is Vietnam is hard to understand, right? And these are people that lived through it. And as you follow them, watch them change in it as they confront different aspects in it at different parts of their lives. And I think that now in looking at it a second time, what I think he's trying to craft is this is not an easy subject to get your hands around. This is, even for the people that were there, you're going to see them in this thing change, right? And so I think that's when I back away from it and look at it from the 10,000-foot view, that Vietnam is – It's a complex war, you know, and you're going to see the people involved in it change, and yeah. You're going to see political people change, you're going to see military people change, you're going to see civilian change, and so if you want to understand it, you know, it's not something Vietnam not understandable, you know, right. in 18 hours of watching. Right.
I'll accept that. That's for sure. I only saw it once. I have to tell you. I come away from it, especially that last episode, you know, about the evacuation, about what happened in Vietnam afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, irony of ironies, they're embroiled in a similar quagmire in Cambodia, you know, that they can't get out of. Do you remember that part?
Right, right.
And I'll buy that, you know, but.
The other thing is how eerie it is to watch it, knowing that we're doing, you know, and we've done. You know, the same things in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. Well, what happens, I mean, like, you put it, everything's really complicated when you really look at it the way you should. Nothing is, you know, is simple. But in broad strokes, we lost the war because we lost our resolve and they kept theirs. And the same thing is going to happen probably in regards to Afghanistan. And it's not so much the enemy kept their resolve, as it is that we just lost ours. Right. We're sick of it. You know, the Jews saying we're at the squeeze.
Right.
And so I think the lesson of that is, you know, you really got to be reluctant to get involved in these things. You know?
Well, especially the insurgency part of it, right? I mean,
yeah.
And so is there an art to doing insurgency that involves low numbers training without, you know, that transition to full kinetics? And if you could master that art, then maybe you have a way of influencing, but if you can't master that art, you know, I think if you didn't get the memo by now, good God,
right.
Timmy,
General Zinni. Yeah. I need to say one more thing before Timmy goes. General Zinni gave a good, not class, but he was comments. He was talking about counterinsurgency and how the Brits had been so good at it. He's the guy I got the idea from, is the Brits were like, hey, it's not a success if we're in the red at the end of this thing, even if we so-called win. We got to be in the black because we're a little country. So what he said was, what they were good at was key terrain. Like, for instance, they didn't have, like, rebellions in some place in Africa that they're rife with now because the Brits would grab water. They would identify, and that's just one example, but they'd identify what was vitally important, get control of it, and with a few people, control whole societies, which I don't think is right, but they were shrewd that way. And the reason was not that they're shrewder than anybody, because I don't think they are, but they were concerned about the financial cost of these things, which really is what ends them. It's what killed every empire from the, you know, from the Persians all the way to the Spanish, you know, right. That's what does it. And it could do it to us.
Timmy?
Hey, I gotta say this to buttress Jeff's points. The Brits, if you work for a British security company, their attention to detail regarding the expenditure of any amount of money not budgeted for is intense. I've never seen anything like that. But I want to go back to the medals thing, because I do believe you can find OIF and OEF vets who will toss their medals in a heartbeat. I hope none of them are our friends, but I'm sure we would. But what really sticks in my craw is that Kerry, years later, when those medals were prominently displayed in his Senate office, contended those were the ones he won. He didn't even fess up to going and buying replacements or anything like that. He tried to lie about it then. And as you look at who's the prominent Vietnam War veterans within our political establishment, Blumenthal, a Stolen Valor guy, and I can go off 20 minutes on Stolen Valor, and Kerry, who's not so prominent now, but certainly was, And it's irritating to see them continually ascend up the ladder of responsibility, knowing that, because there are some things that are black and white to us. Okay, you want to throw your medals, fine. But don't lie about that crap when you're back in the office. Fess up to it. Tell them what you did. And the testimony he gave, which was total fiction, will never be forgiven by me. And I don't think any American should. It was a slight on our honor as a nation.
The other thing was, a lot of people, like guys were saying, how many medals does Curry have? He keeps throwing them, you know, he's throwing them here, he's throwing them there. Where is he getting them all?
but to me, there's, if you, and I, again, I wish I could watch it in its entirety, because I'd be curious now to see it. But to me, I saw somebody talking about Curry's statement, and they said his initial statement represented us being lied to, right, as a nation, as guys, and went over and sacrificed. And the more we read, especially after the Pentagon Papers came out, you know, the more they knew, right? And so the anger that comes from that. And then the part two of his testimony is the Q&A and when he talks about atrocities. Now, I'd want to go back and look note that, trying to give Musgrave the benefit of the doubt. Right, because I agree with Timmy. I mean, the stuff he said and the broad brush that he painted with, in my opinion, is unforgivable. Right,
and the irony is, the next episode, he's bitching about Jane Fonda. He's saying the same thing about Jane Fonda that I'm saying about him.
Right.
Remember, he totally didn't forgive her. You know,
she didn't
fight in Vietnam.
He was because she said she was our fantasy, right? She was a fantasy. Here's an email. Good morning, Mac. I, too, rewatched the documentary. There are many compelling segments. Hal Kushner was one, and the other one is Bill Earnhardt, the Marine who admitted he says having sex with a Vietnamese girl with a few other Marines during the Battle of Hue. I feel for him very much. There was so much personal anguish and struggle with his decision, which I believe he will never get past. In addition, if it were even consensual at the time, age, etc., I found myself being very sympathetic to him. Sad, Dave. It's from a former Marine who lives up in Vacaville, California. I think watching it a second time, I mean, it was a good exercise for me. I enjoyed it. I started watching Vietnam in HD, which is very different, right? But I also started watching a series called America, right? I can't remember. It's made by the America in Color.
Story of Us?
Yeah, and it goes by decades. Yeah. It starts in the 20s. And let me tell you, I would recommend to everybody watch that. It's on Amazon Prime. And first of all, it's color, and they've slowed the video down to be like, you know, you see like people in 1910 and 1920 in video, and they're like, everybody's like hauling ass, marching around. Right? Yeah. Like, why the fuck
they're is busier then?
Yeah, I know. Why the fuck is everybody walking so fast? Well, it's the speed of the film, right? And so they slow it down, and it's colorized, and it's done really well, and it looks, I mean, so different, but. I mean, what we're going through today as a nation, they did for over a decade, right? Throughout the 30s, right? And for the first like 4 years, they couldn't drink, and so right, it was the country was still dry, and then FDR is elected. But it's really fascinating, you know, how the country went back to work, and you know the WPA and the Civilian Conservation Corps and all of that. I mean, that went on, and you wonder why our grandparents, saved their money and lived, modestly. And I mean, that experience, like, holy shit. So I'd recommend everybody watch that. It's very, 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 very interesting, especially the decade of the 30s where we went through so much. I want to talk about the Navy real quick. I didn't put this in the outline I sent you guys, but if you're the CNO and you recommend with the acting SecNav, right, that Captain Crozier be reinstated, and the chairman recommends to the Secretary of Defense that he not be, and that a full-blown investigation be done, which will take months, which will at that point probably render the decision moot. Is that a vote of no confidence for the CNO?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's so bizarre. I mean, it's hard to know where the solid ground is on this, you know, Mac?
Yeah. Timmy, vote of no confidence?
It's clearly a vote of no confidence. And would not putting the captain back be suborning insubordination? Because it's the question whether he was right or wrong is irrelevant. It's what he did. When he hit send, he relieved himself, and he knew it. I mean, this isn't a mystery to me. I am mystified at what the Navy's thinking. It's unsettling.
Yeah, it is. And so to me, part of that conversation between Gilday and the acting SecNav about our recommendation is, to me, would be, hey, look, you know, why would we? The implications that if this guy can do what he did in public and get his command back for every other commander, I can't in good conscience. Yeah. You know, is there more than enough blame to go around? Yes. But he launched that series of events. He's responsible for that sequence. He's the commanding officer. He's got to be held accountable. And I can't save him from that. I don't know how you get around that. But fuck that. We'll recommend that he be reinstated because it'll make everybody happy. It's the right thing to. But to me, when the chairman and SecDef, when they don't buy it, I mean, and it hasn't been worded like this because I don't know people take things apart like we do. But to me, it's an incredible vote of no confidence for the CNO. And this, the acting SecNav, he'll be gone soon enough. So
when the acting SecNav fired the guy, it was a vote of no confidence for the fleet admiral, for everybody between Crozier and himself. Right. It was a vote of no confidence on his part. So I agree with you. It's like
you have the circular firing squad of votes of no confidence.
It's like, hey.
I'll
tell you what, Mac. I think I would love to see you get General Van Riper on, hit him with the question. I think we might actually break him into using a string of curse words. I believe he'd be upset enough to lose his composure and start dropping F-bombs, and we could record that. That'd be awesome.
You could finally get him to go where he'd never gone in his life. Here's another email about Vietnam. I watched the Contien episode last night again. I love Musgrave. He tells the truth, and he's got a lot of Marine pride in his heart. He's earned the right. I also agree with Jeff's point about Vietnam being a noble cause but entirely fucked up by Johnson, McNamara, no relation, and Westmoreland. Let's remember these guys were 22 to 25 years old and were still in shock at the realization of how inept the U.S. effort really was. Recall Carl Marlantis and his clenched teeth. It wouldn't be hard for a cheese dick like Kerry to induce those guys into throwing medals away. Yes, by all means, get him on All Marine Radio. So, yeah, I've got to track down Musgrave and talk about that. So,
he's paid his dues. There's no doubt in that.
No, I could just – because the anger – and here's what I thought in terms of the anger – that about these subjects, and you get a little bit when we get pissed, right?
Yeah.
That's like the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
I mean, it's white, hot, molten anger, right? When it, and, you know, 58,000 KIA, and you're finding out that you got lied to and they haven't believed that this thing was winnable since 1964, 65. And you're reading that shit. I mean, I could only you'd be seething with anger. So that's why I say, you know, I could see people, you know, all of a sudden we're going to show up and we're going to do one thing, and all of a sudden we get fuck you again, and then I could see guys saying, oh no, fuck them.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, it's certainly
no.
There's like if I could pull back, If you could give me a dollar for every sentence and stupid thing I've ever said in my life, I'd be rich, man. I wouldn't be.
To include, aren't we on Libo Gunny?
Yes, that was one of the better ones. And that wasn't a rhetorical question.
Hey, Matt, was Daryl at the in 1-9 the same time that Musgrave was? Daryl Horn?
I don't know because I think if Musgrave was, he would have spoken. He would have said something about Operation Buffalo.
I bet you Galinas was.
Yes.
Yeah, bet you he was.
But Galinas
wasn't at Buffalo, right?
Yeah, he was on Buffalo.
You set me straight on that. I thought he was.
Yeah, he was like.
I bet that's where he got the Silver Star, but it's not where he got it.
He was like doing B-Doc shit or something around the base. The whole Gilday thing, man. I don't know. It's like, you know, what is the Navy thinking? Next question. COVID-19 thoughts. Another week has gone by. It's been interesting to watch the debate about data here in the last week. And the article I read this morning about data. There's a quote in there by the guy who runs the Harvard School of Public Health, and so he's asked about the data, right? And he says, none of these numbers can be fully trusted because they're based on flawed and inadequate testing, said Dr. Michael Mina of Harvard School of Public Health. However, right, collectively, they suggest we have been off the mark by huge, huge, huge numbers. Yeah. So to me, I think that's ground truth, that any one of these you could cite. And when you look at the numbers, the article says, you know, the number of positives in New Jersey is 48.6%, right? The number in New York is 34.9%. And you go down, okay. But you can't deny, as you go down, 60% of the states have positivity rates over 10%, which is supposedly not what it was going to be by multiples. So, and that's what I think the truth is. Like, you can discount the specific and you can say, okay, if the test was flawed, give me a percentage, 5, 10, 15, 20. And that doesn't account for all of this. And he concedes that. He concedes that with the collective comment. So I think that's been pretty interesting. The other thing is that you're watching public figures now attempting to manage this, and it's getting more and more contentious around the nation. And that, I know we were talking earlier by text that, you know, California's got one set of rules from Eureka up by the Oregon border to Orange County and Los Angeles County, San Diego County, and San Francisco. Right? I mean, that's just stupid. It's stupid.
Tremendously stupid.
Yeah, and it's hurting people. So anyway, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's the. It's very. It's like this is the conundrum is, you know, they're using the if you were to say there's some like red light things you can't say, you know, and one of them is we're going to take a chance and you know, and ignore this thing and hope that it doesn't kill too many people. But really, that's what you got to do. Because otherwise, you destroy your nation. Like to save individual lives, you're going to destroy the nation.
Isn't there a quote? Lincoln's quote, right?
Right.
What's Lincoln's quote? If I could save the nation and free the slaves, I would do that. If I could save the nation and not free the slaves, I would do that. Right.
Yeah.
But I will save the union. And so that's the point. And to me, the point that they have to say is, hey, look, for me to take this to zero deaths, I have to destroy the economy. I can't do that. So we were going to accept that there's going to be an increase in COVID as we come out of this. There's going to be increase of death. But I can't prevent that. And the question is, how much that increases, and that will be a function of how well we put into practice these things we've learned. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, it's like those two Kern County doctors that you put up there, Mike, Mac, and those guys are saying basically we're destroying our ability to develop immunity, not only to that but to other things with this insane stay away from each other thing to the point where it's going to cause more harm than good. My brother, he's a respiratory therapist. In Hartford Hospital.
Whoa.
He's working his ass off every day because all these old folks are being shipped in to die. My brother's the one who takes them off the
ventilator.
ventilators, and then they die. That's what he does. And he's like, you know, to him, then he goes home, and it's like everybody's acting. He's like, these are the people that he's squiring into death are people who are already sick. I mean, whole, you know, nursing homes, you know, being denuded of people, right, because that's who this thing is killing. Right. Because if we could protect those people and let everybody else go about their business, like your average 30-year-old guy goes, he gets this thing, and then he gets over it, doesn't even know he has it probably, and he's good to go. And that's how this thing, how it goes. If we kept it away from each other just because it's a good way to do, you should all do that. No more shaking hands, no more breathing in each other's faces, everyone wearing a mask. We would get so, you'd have people dying over the common cold after a while.
You know what's interesting, though, is our approach has been the exact opposite, I think, of what probably the data will tell us that we should have done, which was Sweden's model allowed this thing to go through the population, and you got to protect the people that are most vulnerable, which means we should have turned to on, you know, fortifying our senior citizen homes, you know, our veteran homes and things like that, and quarantining them, and we ignored them.
Yeah.
Until we started getting, you know, the phone calls that, hey, there's 16 bodies and all the workers left.
Well, Cuomo ordered the nursing homes to take back coronavirus people. So, you know what I mean? He said, now we're going to put them back in the nursing home.
Right. Timmy?
Well, I have to correct you, Mike. It's the T.H. Chan School of Public Health, not the Harvard School
of Public Health. Okay, the next person that calls me Mike, I'm going to fucking snap on.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mac. But anyway,
twice in five fucking minutes, man. Who the fuck is Mike?
I don't know. What the hell's gone into me?
Mike? I hear he's a real jerk.
This coronavirus lockdown.
Jeffrey? Mac.
But at any rate, you know, when you had Don on yesterday, you had a public health professional using data that is clearly accurate, CDC data, explaining to you why you can't open things up, because guys like Don Shields, they've got to work with the solid numbers the government provides them. Right. They have no ability to go over and look at Bakersfield doctors extrapolating from antibody testing. That's not part of his worldview, because he's got to deal with the numbers that are right in front of his face that are solid, and they're solid numbers.
Right.
But the case fatality rate is irrelevant. It's the infection fatality rate that we're worried about, and that looks like, again, from multiple sources of people doing regression analysis, that's going to come in around in between 0.1 and 0.3%, most likely less lethal than the 2017-2018 flu season. That's a fact. But I want to tell you the pushback that people are receiving for stating these facts and unequivocally saying this is nonsense is intense.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to a point, I've unfriended people, I've stopped looking at my Facebook page, and I'm not sitting here advocating ignoring anything. I have counseled all along, do as we're told, let's try to help each other. I've just been saying all along, something's fishy with the numbers, and I was proved right. Now in the future, let's hope that my terror at the economic fallout is misplaced. What if we come back online as smoothly as we went offline? I guess it's possible, but I don't see how that happens, because we all know the economy is trillions of small transactions between individuals for goods and services done in good faith. That's what an economy is. And you can't sit there and start looking at it at a big idiosyncratic and shut down this and half that. And that doesn't work. So the damage, I'm afraid, is going to be immense. And we don't know. But right now, I'm shutting up, because the vitriol with which people react to any kind of mention that this is all for naught is alarming. I think people like Gavin Newsom actually believe there's a virus out there that will kill him. And I don't understand why he feels that way, but that seems to be what's going on.
Yeah,
I think he doesn't. I don't think he's that dumb. I think they're just going to use this thing as a club to hit President Trump, and hope that they can milk it into the, to the November timeframe for the election. They hope that there's a resurgence of the. They actually hope that they can use this thing that doesn't really exist.
I just see him as he's a politician, and he's not going to do anything that risks the franchise. And the franchise is the Newsom franchise. That's what the franchise is. So I'm gonna quote unquote follow the science, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're gonna follow the science, and you're gonna destroy the economy, right? Okay. So because by the time the testing shows up in mid June, what the fuck, man? What happens to the economy? So to me, you know, I think what George is gonna find is what Norway has found, right?
Right.
And so they're going to go down, and the states that reopen, they will see marginal increases that they will in turn manage, and then life will begin to go on. But most importantly, economic activity will begin to get going, and people, you know, will begin to go back to work. They'll solve the social distancing issue in restaurants, and they'll figure out ways to do that, and so people can go back to work, and there can be some economic, you know, normalcy in the country. And so to me, that's and the longer that you push that off, you're just delaying the pain, and you're giving some businesses a death sentence that they won't come out of.
That's exactly right.
And you're also risking.
Hold on. So ultimately, I see him as a coward, right? He's a politician in a very calculating way, hiding inside of scientific data, but he's a fucking afraid to get to that middle ground where a leader would go, as a leader try to make hard decisions and tell people this is where we've got to go.
Yeah.
And but I wouldn't call Don Shields a coward. I would call John Shields a guy who has a set of data that he's forced to work with given the constraints of his job. But the thing is
let me point something out. So when you're Gavin Newsom, you have Don Shields sitting there. You also have Jeff Kenney, who's giving – he's your economic advisor, right? And you go around the table, and each one of those people are supposed to advocate for what they represent in the portfolio. I mean, it's just like sitting around at a morning briefing in Iraq or Afghanistan. Everybody's supposed to come and tell you. You say yes or no. You make the decision, right? And so to me, I agree with you. That's his job, is to represent that to you. So,
I just wanted to do that because I wouldn't want to beat up on him. He sounds like such a decent guy.
Oh,
he's
an awesome guy.
Yeah, but we don't know the downsides. We don't know what the cost, the deaths of despair, if you will, are going to be. And if those end up becoming a gigantic problem, I think Gavin Newsom's political calculations are going to prove to be wrong. And I think the people who stuck with principle throughout this – and I want to think the South Dakota governor did, because she's attractive. I mean, what the hell? I like what her position.
Nice.
But I want to think that
just
she
when we were thinking you weren't did. Just think when we think we were thinking you weren't the dumbest shithead in town. You have to go there and be a sexist shithead.
Yeah, I know. But you got to admit. But I want to think that her decisions are being made from principles of putting the people and the public welfare in totality in consideration, not making craven political decisions. Because I think Gavin Newsom's decision is going to bite him in the ass. We don't know how bad it's going to get.
I don't think it will, because California is too overwhelmingly Democratic. I think in a state that was more balanced, it would, right? And, I mean, there was an article that I saw that the head of the Republican Party said, you know, it's a good thing that most district attorneys and most sheriffs are just ignoring what the governor is saying. They're not arresting people for going in parks. In fact, interestingly enough, in Costa Mesa yesterday, Colleen and I were going to Home Depot, and the sign that was in front of the park that said State of the Park by order was gone.
Yeah.
And there were some people in the park. So I don't know if it's, you know, going to be benign neglect of these proclamations, but it's interesting.
Yeah, it's getting weird. I'll tell you, it's like, can you imagine because my grandparents were, when they're still alive, they would talk about the Depression. It was like a vivid, horrible thing for them. They came to America, I'm talking the Italian side, because both Irish grandparents were dead early. But they both remembered both the flu and Spanish influenza after World War I, and the Depression was way more horrific in their mind. And I just, you know, I kind of imagine, what if in order to, I can imagine asking the ghosts of my grand Antonio Di Pasquale and Maria Di Pasquale, you know, what if the guys who, when the Spanish flu was ending, they decided to, you know, close all businesses and everything and have a depression in order to help get rid of the flu. They would have looked at me, well, they looked at me a lot like this anyway, like I was crazy. But, you know, they would have said, Jeffrey, are you un pazzo? You know, un pazzo, it's crazy in Italian, you know. It's insane to destroy, oh, things aren't bad enough with this virus. Now we're going to destroy our economy too.
San Francisco did that. They had the Great Mask Revolt, as I recall. I've read the references to it, but I believe that the public ignored them.
Yeah.
But San Francisco had a mask mandate during 1918.
I got an email from somebody who emailed earlier, and Tom's River to reopen parks, right? And here's some of the rules. Parking at parks will be limited to 50% capacity. So if it's beyond 50%, who gets the ticket? Who decides? I guess the cop there. Like, cops are really going to be into that. Playgrounds, restrooms, pavilions, tennis courts, pickleball courts, basketball courts, and visitor centers will remain closed. Picnics and team sports are not allowed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Governor Murphy said passive recreation, including running, hiking, biking, fishing, boating, kayaking, will be allowed. The order also opens up golf course, and then there's like 15 regulations about going golfing, right? You can't touch the flag. Removing bunker. Now you don't have to rake it. If you hit out of the trap, don't got to rake it because you'd have to touch the rake, right?
Yeah.
No caddies can be used. Tee times can only have two people unless the foursome includes immediate family members, caretakers, household members, or romantic partners.
Romantic partners,
right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, are you two family members? No, we're romantic partners. Oh, sorry. That could be your out for everything. Hey, why do you have three people at this table? We're romantic partners. All right,
one of us is a romantic partner, but I'm not saying who.
Yeah, the shame of all that is, what is the best way to boost your immune system for this second wave, which we can anticipate coming this fall? The best way
is to interact with other people.
Right? Go to the Mustang Ranch.
No, get outside and exercise.
Do you know how many cases of COVID-19 in DOD today?
No,
I want to say
135,
something like that. Right, yeah. Now, how many cases of the clap do you think are there in the DOD today? More or less
135.
more or less than 135.
It depends on where the ships have been, but I'd venture to say it could be higher than that easy.
You think? So what do we have? We have more hemorrhoids, and we have more, you know, I mean, go down the list of things we have more than 135 today.
Inside. More hangovers.
That's for sure. Interesting stuff. How about the latest story about the FBI?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. You mean with General Flynn?
I turn it over to Jeff. I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah. I don't know if it's right to turn over to me because I know the real, the dark history of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And this is just more of the same, you know. But
just so everybody knows, this is on, I don't know the guy's name, but if I look it up, I can get his name. But his handwritten notes, right? And where he's saying game playing ? Or are we simply trying to catch him in a lie to get him to resign? Right?
Yeah.
And so it's you're watching. You're like, this is what the FBI does?
Yeah, it is what they do. I mean, I have friends of mine who are cops. My best friend from my enlisted days, he was a guy who became a cop and then a lawyer, so he could become a DA. And he'll tell you the FBI doesn't ever solve crimes. They decide who's guilty and then get evidence against the guy. And if they have to, they'll make it up. And that's not how they always are, but sometimes they're that way. And it used to be they were doing it against people that had already proven themselves to be criminals, a.k.a., you know, white or not white, but like the five mafia guys, you know, family heads in New York, they would do that stuff. they use other criminals to rat out other criminals and actually help those other criminals have the freedom to commit murder and drug trafficking and stuff. And, you know, they did that. They have taken that philosophy, both the people in the Justice Department and FBI agents, to frame people in the government whose only crime is they're on the wrong side of the aisle. And that's horrific, because that can go either way, depending on, you know, which way they go.
Oh, but I'll tell you what, you hear this and you're just like, gee, you got to be kidding me, man. I mean, the good guys are really the bad guys, and and they have their own agenda and they decide. I mean,
yeah, they decide, not us.
Yeah, it's not about justice. I'll tell you what, you read it, it's like, fuck. Timmy, any thoughts?
Well, I got to go back to when we were in IOC, and myself and Bob Muse were establishing some kind of relationship with the FBI, and I cannot remember what we were doing, something that General Allen had dreamed up. But I knew those guys, you know, and I remember meeting a guy from behavioral sciences, and he said to me, hey, do you want to go down in the basement and look at some of these pictures? And I said, absolutely not. And he goes, that's the correct answer. We like you already, right? So I went through the FBI Farms instructors course. I've still got golden saber rounds from them that they gave me. So it's hard for me to say what I'm going to say, which is it's ridiculous. We don't know. It seems like this is at the highest level of the counterterrorism a mechanism, but this is at the exact same time the CIA was losing. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. It's a year after the CIA lost every asset in China, killed, networks destroyed, the biggest counterintelligence crisis in our history. This is in open reporting. I'm not making things up because I didn't have a clearance anyway. So why when there's 385,000 Chinese students here with minders mining our data technology is a counterterrorism division focused on Mike Flynn, of all people, who's a stand-up guy. No, this is horrible what happened to him.
Hey, Bronzy's walking by.
Day in court.
What's that?
Yeah.
I know. I'm just telling you, Mac, Bronzy's walking by. He's getting his ass chewed by the general. So, yeah, you're right. I'm in the parking lot, man. I'm seeing everybody.
You know, for those of you who don't know, that loud cackle you heard, that was Chris Bronzy's laugh.
Yes.
That was not a sound effect. Okay, just so everybody knows.
Oh, no shit.
That was Chris Bronzy's lap. Hold on. I had a listener said, hey, you know, we know you guys as kind of Marines, but I have some questions for you. First of all, could you ask them, what is your favorite food? So how would you like to do this? Would you like to talk about breakfast, lunch, and dinner? So, Timmy, you want to go first? What's your go-to breakfast?
My go-to breakfast is a vegetable omelet with black beans and tortillas, which I avail myself once a week at the local diner.
Okay.
And that's it. I don't eat breakfast normally.
Okay.
But and I'll cut to the chase on food. My favorite food is sushi. I love that stuff.
All right.
Not that I can get it down here.
What do you eat for lunch?
If I'm on a regular diet, a sandwich. But I've been on a different diet because I'm trying to get my insulin dependence down. So I eat what the hell I'm given at lunch, which ain't much.
Wow, Jeff, what's your go-to breakfast?
Two eggs over easy mixed in with that SOS, the shit from shit on a shingle, that chopped meat stuff. I love that. It's not easy to get, though, you know. You get the chow, that's about it. And for my favorite, I don't eat lunch either, you know. I eat what's left over from yesterday for lunch sometimes. But for my favorite dinner, like, is lamb chops with rice and spinach.
Wow.
Or any kind of lamb kebab thing. That's why I didn't mind being eaten with the Afghans and the Iraqis, because I like lamb.
They love
or even something they just say is lamb.
They love
it. Like goat or rat, but if they say it's lamb,
so. They love it. I'll either eat yogurt or oatmeal for breakfast. I like them. I don't. I forced myself to eat at lunch. Yesterday I steamed some broccoli and then threw some other green stuff on it. For dinner, my favorite dinner, I don't know, I'm still partial to, if I want to eat something like and look forward to it, it would be steak. Ribeye steak would be something that I would tell you is my favorite. How about favorite dessert, Timmy?
Pecan pie,
Jeff?
Hot fudge sundae.
Mine is Chick-fil-A ice cream. Chick-fil-A ice cream is the best. If you've never had it, go have it. Trust me.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I haven't had – I'm too much of a fat ass to be allowed dessert. So, when I get drunk, I'll sometimes – there's no hot fudge sundaes laying around. So I just eat like one time I thought X-Lax was chocolate. And after I had a few, you know?
Shut up.
So, yeah, I'm a chocolate file, I guess.
All right. Favorite movie that you would recommend, Jeff?
Favorite movie I would recommend. I have to tell you, I would
recommend
it for like the 50th time. Lonely Are the Brave with Kirk Douglas.
Lonely Are the Brave. And it's about?
It's about a modern day cowboy in the 50s who he commits a misdemeanor crime because of his bad judgment, it becomes a felony and escapes from jail, and he's being chased from Arizona into Mexico. And he's being chased by, of all people, Sheriff Walter Matthau. And it's a good flick. It's like the prototype Rambo. And it comes out during the thing, it's like made in 1962, that he's like he got the Distinguished Service Cross in Korea for leading a escape from one of the prisons. And that's my favorite. It's a small movie, but it's a great one.
Timmy?
Hands down, it's Breaker Morant, which was an Australian movie released in the 80s. It's about the Boer War. It's a true story. It covers a detachment of cavaliers who were fighting guerrilla style. And then once the Brits decided they wanted to ramp down the war, they grabbed the guys and executed them for fighting guerrilla style. They only executed two. The third one they let live, the young one, young lieutenant, who ultimately wrote the book that became the movie. But Breaker Morant, as far as cinematography, as looking at guys who are out, you know, and making a cold camp in the bush, it's beautiful, and it's a great story.
That is a great movie. You're right, Tim. The Bushville Carbineers. In the Boer War. Mac, if you ever want to watch something, very good. Outstanding. He's right.
I haven't watched it.
It's
been years since I watched that, Breaker Morant.
Yeah.
Mine is It's a Wonderful Life. I liked it when I was younger. And we all saw it because the company who made it lost the copyright. And so when cable TV started, you could show that son of a bitch for free. And so when cable started, like in the late 70s, early 80s, they could play It's a Wonderful Life, and it got this huge following. And I liked it. But now, after doing post-traumatic winning, it means something different to me, right? Contemplating suicide and redemption and things like that. So for different reasons now, I shared with these guys I got a couple of emails about, my day yesterday. And to me, I shared that on the air a little bit ago and then with these guys yesterday. But there's all those lines are joy. All those except the suicide, obviously. But the email at 5:11 in the morning, that guy's reaching out for help, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big step. Yeah, I mean, a huge step. Talking about I was hungover sitting in the back row. And you started, and I sat there spellbound for the whole 3 hours. I was like, what the fuck is this? And another Marine officer reaching out before he deploys, can I hook you up with this Marine who just got out, who's really struggling, and I'm afraid if I abandon him, something bad's going to – yes. And then the last one was, another battalion commander with a Marine, a staff NCO who lost a child in their own home, and could you help? And every one of those stories is going to turn out good. I know it because I know Marines, and I know the experience we all have had collectively as people kind of embrace this. So So cool stuff, which is related to kind of It's a Wonderful Life. So,
can I point something out, Mac?
Sure.
Okay, Jeff's favorite movie is a hard guy gun dude, right? That's running from the law. My favorite movie is a bunch of guys who got fucked over, who were doing what they were told, but get screwed over by the government. And your favorite movie is a very uplifting and powerful drama. I think that says something about each of us. I'm not sure I'm not sure what, but it could possibly be good news. We don't know.
Well, it's hysterical the whole how we based each on a false premise because I lied. My real favorite movie is Wizard of Oz, but I didn't want to admit that. But I am now. So there. Who doesn't love Wizard of Oz, for Christ's sake? That lion is the best guy. That's me. The cowardly lion.
I'm good.
Yeah, man. That says something, though, brother. But that's I'm going to have to watch It's a Wonderful Life.
It's rough, I tell you, Missy, when you're born to be a sissy. It's great, man.
This whole thing. What are you doing with your life? I'm just trying to prove I'm not a pussy, man.
Yeah, that's right.
All of this, I'm just. Well, really? Yeah. No, let me tell you. If you watch America, the story of us in the decades of the 30s, that's where Technicolor had been around for about 10 years, but it was too expensive. And all the money they made with Wizard of Oz, they just broke even with it. But they changed the film industry, right? They changed the film industry with it. So it was interesting to watch because somebody on the set had their own home movie camera.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really, I saw that.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Also, there was somebody down in Alamogordo who had a who they let have a fucking movie camera, if you can imagine that. And they film. You know, parties and different social things. Sure. So, hey, listen to this. They filmed them walking. They transported the core that went into the test nuclear bomb that they detonated in Alamogordo. They transported that in the back seat of like a Ford whatever. And it shows them walking with it, and they're putting it in the back seat of the fucking car. And you're just, right, it's laughable, but it's funny. The all right, hold on. There was one more question. Oh, a book that each one of you would recommend to all of us to read. That's a hard one.
Yeah,
I'll go first.
Go ahead.
This Kind of War by T.R. Fehrenbach.
Ooh.
Yeah, because it talks about the necessity of having a legion. I would submit to you that we would be part of that legion. And it talks about the friction between a civilian society, a liberal democracy like ours, who does not want to perceive that their sons are being abused in the army, the friction between that and the amount of discipline demanded by your average mediocre Division NCAA 1A football coach, because the football coach has a lot more latitude to enforce a lot more discipline than we did in the 1950s, and that shit we don't now. We have now.
No,
it's an interesting book.
It's a straight up fact right there.
Yeah.
Jeff, book?
I would say Bright and Shining Lie, which should surprise you because it's written by what I would call a peace fag. Sheehan, who is that, you know. But I have to tell you, I give credit where credit's due. It's a great book, and it's about this guy who had the attitude was, we can fucking do this thing, no matter how discouraging it got. And he wasn't a perfect guy, John Paul Van.
Right.
And even he had a lot of talent, which is where the similarities between him and me end. But the not a perfect guy part, I'm just like him. It's just I didn't have near the amount of drive and talent this guy had, and he was determined to make this thing a success any way he could. And ultimately, of course, he got killed in 72. But it's a great book because he does vignettes on Vietnam and on life before the war, life during the war, life after the war, and how it affected the key players in there, to include like Donald Rumsfeld, who was a confidant and a fellow, fellow Rand Corporation guy in Vietnam with John Paul Van, in the late 60s. And so it's a great book on that. It's about how America went from being the victors in World War II to the uncertain plagued behemoth that we are now,
Yeah. That means so Rumsfeld was a part of the RAND study. That's awesome. Makes me feel even more pissed off at his dumb ass.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll tell you, Rand was no Rumsfeld fan either. Or not Rumsfeld. I don't even. He's not even mentioned in the book. But I mean, McNamara. He's not a McNamara. You know, he thought the. He actually gave a brief saying we're not winning like this, and they fucking shook him. Well, they. You know, he had other problems too. You know, but yeah, he was. It's a very complex, interesting guy, and then drawn out his life. He really kind of paints a good picture of the whole Vietnam thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking for a book that I would recommend, and I don't off the top of my head. The one that I really enjoyed, if you want a really interesting, it depends what you want to read about, but if you want to read. I would recommend Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. But if we're talking about Marine stuff, because I think that's a transformational book in your life. I mean, it has. And again, what I love about Frankl is that coming to the conclusion, being taught that stuff by Marines, and then discovering later that Frankl went down the same path and reached the same conclusion. That's what I find really funny. But if a Marine book, I would tell you the Lions of Iwo Jima about the 28th Marine Regiment on Iwo Jima, their training. It's a very human picture of the organization. You meet guys like Keith Wells. You meet guys like, you know, Chandler Johnson, Colonel Leversage, and all, you know. But it's this human drama. And the people that made up the organization. It's a wonderfully written by Major General Fred Haynes, who was I think like the G3 or the S3 Bravo for the regiment on Iwo Jima. So it's really I picked it up on my way to Iraq out in 29 Palms, and I think I might have stolen it from them. The library.
When I was a MESAP, he was a guest speaker at our first ball.
Brett Haynes?
Yeah, University in Colorado, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good dude.
Right. And but it's just this wonderful, you know, it talks about Colonel Leversage. The officers go out, right? So you can imagine they're all in their alphas or on Libo out in Honolulu. And he's playing slot machines and he gets pissed. And Leversage was an Olympic athlete. He picks
up Harry the Horse, they call him.
Yeah, he picks up the fucking slot machine and he throws it through the window. As a regimental, and so they're all in the bar, and they hear this fucking huge crash, and they, you know, they stick their head through the doorway, and it's like the slot machine's gone, and the window's there, and Liversidge is like wiping his hands off, and they're like, "Hey, sir, what's up?" And he's like, "Nothing."
Yeah,
and they're like, "All right, back to the bar we go," right?
And that's what I was talking to Etor about that. We're like, someone should write a book about the fucking you know, like the back page history of the Marine Corps, like everything from, you know, from shit like that to like when General Hopkins was Lieutenant Colonel and those other, and Patty Collins, they tore up the man trap and went all the way to the Jim Hall ball and fucking shit afterwards. You know what I mean? It's like, there's so much good, funny shit that happens.
The Jim Hall ball. Yeah. Wow. All right. All right. Timmy, final thought today.
Well, brother, it's been a pleasure sitting and chatting with you guys, as always, from my isolated quarantine home here in South Texas. And look, man, I hope we come out of this sooner than it's looking. I can't help but feel an unease as this continues, because it's not self-evident to me that it's warranted.
Yeah, but I think you're asking politicians to behave with the courage of a leader. And I think when you're doing that, to quote my father, you're asking them for something they can't give you, and who's failing who.
Yeah, but I just hope we come out of this thing smoothly.
Hope's not a COA, Timmy.
No, I'm talking about them with the population, not the politicians. I know where their limitations are.
I know, but
I'm talking about the rest of us, and
I'm in the same place you are. But again, I go back to, right, we're asking people for behavior that they just don't really give us. So
I'm worried to death about this.
It would be the exceptional leader that would do something like that. Jeff, final thought today?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is there's going to be like a soft rebellion. I don't know if you even call it a soft, but that's the way of doing it. But where people just say, we're going back to work and we don't give a fuck what you say or do.
Right.
Try and stop us. And like you said, Mac, I mean, it's going to reach a point where they're going to be like, we're giving orders we can't enforce anymore.
Right.
Because people first of all, these checks saying the government's cutting, that's actually even worse. That's like giving somebody, you know, who's a heroin addict, that's like giving them meth, you know? So it's like, they're going to say, fuck you. We're just going to go back to work, man, because we got to. No one's going to take care of us except ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've seen no indication from local police here in the Rio Grande Valley that they're being excessively concerned about enforcing things. The parks here are not supposed to be in them, but I go every day and there's plenty of people in them and everybody's remaining calm. The police have been more than reasonable. I just hope this continues, but it cannot continue like this indefinitely. And that's the problem.
And again, when you start seeing news organizations like the Associated Press, right, with headlines like this, reports suggest many have had coronavirus with no symptoms. And then you read quotes like, you know, the Harvard School of Public Health say, collectively, though, they suggest we've been off the mark by huge, huge numbers, right? When you see, right, Harvard associated with the Associated Press, and you're hearing that conclusion, I mean, come on. At some point, I mean, people have to kind of evolve the decision and to something that's close to reality. But again, I don't hold out too much hope for it because, you know, now you got to do a public about face if Newsom does what he says he's going to do, California's going to be in this state for another 6 weeks.
Yes.
Yep. It's crazy.
And it's going to get worse every week.
Right. Right. So, anyway.
And they're gonna cost us the NCAA football season, which I've been using as a joke. But in all seriousness, guys, that to me is weird. I mean, just think about it. That is a disruption that I would have never thought would happen.
Right.
I just cannot believe that we're going to go that
well,
long.
Well, let me
but
tell
right
you.
Now it looks like that's the way it's going to be.
And what you know, most of the athletic leagues are looking for is we need multiple venues. Right, in adjoining states that we can bring people to, right, set up our kind of campus and play on TV because, you know, no sports on TV. Like, what the fuck is that? I mean, whose version of hell is that? It's certainly part of my version of hell. The NFL set a record, you know, with more people watching the draft ever. Why? Because we're all fucking cooped up with nothing to watch. And so, you know, but I don't know. It's just it's going to take courage. And again, the guy – that's why I hope Georgia, you know, shows everybody that, yeah, we had a marginal increase. Yeah, our deaths did go up. Okay, but again, those deaths are centered in people that did not follow the directions. They had high morbidity rate factors, and they just didn't listen, right? I can fix a lot of things. I cannot fix stupid, and I can't save you from yourself. So, you know, we expected that, and we warned people about it, and that's as good as we can do as a government. But beyond that, you know, now we've got our economies coming back. You know, people are understanding it, and we're being able to get on with life because we can do this. And so I hope they're successful.
And I got to save Brown. I got to say, Ron, so if in fact we do not have these sports seasons because it's deemed unsafe to have that many people together, there has never been a better time for local governments to launch an initiative to reduce comorbidity. In my area, I'm talking obesity. If there was ever a time to encourage people to get outside and do stuff, there should be money coming down to pay for umpire leagues and to set things up so that as many people as you have are playing softball base and leagues, because now we're talking less than 50 people. So we're well within the parameters. If they cared about the health of the citizens, this would be the blitz that they're launching. Hey, man, we've got to get outside. We've got to exercise because it increases your immune system, period. Yeah. It's not debatable, but we're doing the exact opposite. And
yeah,
again,
it's crazy. There's a lot of people not getting biopsies on fucking tumors and shit because that's elective compared to, you know, if you have a coronavirus thing.
Right.
But the elective surgeries are back on in Texas, and they are booming. I mean, the first day they were lining them up. They're trying to make up for lost time.
Hey, I'll tell you what. One of the best stories that has come out of this is what wasn't she in Texas, the mayor who went and got her nails done?
Yeah, there you go.
That was awesome. Like, I mean, come on. Yeah. Look, I know everybody's in lockdown, and I know I helped put them there, but really, I'm not going to get my nails done? What are you, idiots? I mean, come on.
That's crazy, man.
I thought
that's so hypocritical. It's like
dog groomers are open.
Colorado, Max can get a haircut, but I can't. Colorado and Georgia doing the same thing, but the Georgia guy gets shit on because he's Republican. Colorado guy, he's a Democrat. No one's saying shit, but I'm watching Colorado too because two of my kids live there, and they're like, yeah, we're getting, they're letting us do this, they're letting us do that now. I guess people dying? No, they're just cold. so it's like
All right. All right, boys. Have a good week.
You rock. Yeah, bye, guys.
Have a nice weekend, brothers.
All right. There you have it. That is Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny on the Lynch and Kenny event here on a Thursday. All right. If you're just tuning in, in hour one, I shared my day yesterday. And the point of me sharing it is all those people are about to get their lives changed. All of them. Except the one who took his own life. So out of five stories, four of them are good. And, you can't save everybody. But we can save 90%. And so my point to everybody is post-traumatic winning works. That's the power of it. Is that it's no bullshit. It works. And you look at people that are hurting and they look at you and they say, does it ever stop hurting? And you look at them and say, no. And that provides relief. Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with you. You're going to hurt about that forever. It's all right. And that's comforting as opposed to this other bullshit people sell. And then you show them the path. And you talk to them about transformation. And so I would encourage you to do that. It's real. It helps people. It helps people to find meaning in their suffering. And it'll change their life. So you'll hear about that in hour one. And then I do the news today, which I haven't done in a couple of days. So on a Thursday... Have a great day. All Marine Radio is over and out. Go change somebody's life, by the way. Now I'm out.